Hey everybody, this episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Baseball 19. Make your move. Out of the Park Baseball 19 is now available worldwide. You can get it on Steam, you can get it on Origin, or you can download it directly from OOTPdevelopments.com. Everybody is having a great time playing Out of the Park Baseball 19. We are so thrilled with the reception that it's gotten. We're so happy with all the fans who are playing it. More people than ever are now playing Out of the Park Baseball, and there's a whole bunch of cool stuff coming down the road this summer, including the introduction of our brand new Perfect Team online mode, which is going to get a whole lot of people excited. We got a lot of information coming out about that in a couple of months. But until then, there's so much fun to be had in Out of the Park Baseball 19. Of course, it's got the updated opening day rosters for the 2018 season. It's got the ability, of course, to play as every single franchise from the Major League Club down to the low minors and everywhere in between. And of course, it's got the entire history of baseball, so you can go back in time anywhere. You can create all sorts of custom leagues and play out custom tournaments, and you can do all sorts of crazy stuff, including one of the things that we're doing right now. You'll hear us talk about that. We are having 9 of our Press Row Podcast friends draft their optimal team based upon the current major leagues, and we're going to play them against each other to see how it's going. And Out of the Park Baseball 19 is one of the games powering that. There's just so much good stuff to be found in Out of the Park Baseball 19. You can buy it today. It's only $39.99. And again, I mentioned you can get it on Steam, you can get it on Origin, you can get it right from OTP Developments. And if you're an Origin Access subscriber, you can just go click on a button and be playing it right now as part of an online subscription service. We're so excited for you to play Out of the Park Baseball 19. Go check it out, Out of the Park Baseball 19. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Press Row Podcast. I'm your host this week, Rich Grisham. Brian Wiedei is suspended. He knows what he did, but we will work to get through it. I am very excited because two great people are joining us this week. Two of my favorite people. Up first, we have my good friend Owen Good from Polygon. Owen, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, Rich. How are you?
I'm great. And of course, we have Mills Gaming TV from Mills Gaming TV. Mills Gaming TV, how are you, sir?
I am doing fantastic because it's no longer cold, Rich. And I'm not sure if you know this or not, but I'm essentially a California boy at heart in the mid-Atlantic. And every time it gets cold, I just don't want to do anything and hide under 18 blankets. And now I can wear shorts again. Makes me happy.
You got that thin California blood, don't you, buddy?
I do. I get very red very quickly. I think that's where we should probably stop this conversation. but yes, I do not like the cold.
You've been spotted at some Orioles games lately, Mills. What's the sun gets you out to the ball game? That's what's going on.
I mean, anything can get me out to the ball game. Everyone knows I'm a huge Orioles fan. I'm a huge baseball fan in general. Whenever I go to like a city to travel, I try to catch a baseball game just to either add the stadium to, the bucket list that everyone has that's a baseball fan, or really just to enjoy other cultures. I went to a couple of games at Wrigley, and it's a different feeling being at Wrigley than Camden Yards. I've been to a game at Fenway. Fenway is a different feeling than both of those places. I plan on when I go out to EA Play, I'm going to try to go to a Dodger game because I've heard it feels much more like an upscale kind of crowd. One of the things, it's not always the stadium that gets me. It's the atmosphere and how like the knowledge is different, or how they treat other fans of opposing teams differently. Some are very welcoming. Some are cutthroat, like Yankees fans and stuff like that. But like, that is what really interests me, is what goes on in the crowd. So it's kind of like people watching, I guess.
Very good. Well, the first thing we should talk about is what we've been playing, because it's been a little while since both of you guys have been on the show. Not that long, but a little while. And there's lots of stuff being played. We are going to talk a little more in depth about Super Mega Baseball 2 in just a little bit. So we'll put that game on hold. But Mills, what have you been playing?
Well, the aforementioned Super Mega Baseball, Emily the Show. I'm still playing Madden to this day, but I've been a little more off of sports games. I've been playing a lot of kind of one-off indie games. I played a little Death Garden today, which is a game in closed alpha by the same developers as Dead by Daylight. It's a great kind of 5-1 asymmetrical game in the same heart of Dead by Daylight. I played an absolutely awesome roguelike space battle, just kind of menage a trois of a bunch of different games called Everspace. That's actually that came out on Xbox. That really you mine, you attack, you die, but you keep your schematics and all the stuff you get, and you start over again. Very, very fun. The controls were a little wonky at first, but they become very intuitive as I played it more. And finally, I played a game called Extinction, which reminds me a lot of, for anime fans out there, remember Attack on Titan was a video game that came out to Xbox and wasn't great fanfare, but it has the same kind of battle system where you're in the air a lot of the time attacking huge ogre-like creatures that stand, 10 stories tall. Gives you kind of that Shadow of the Colossus feel, kind of, because you got to knock certain things off of them before you can take them down. But there's multiple in stages, but you have to beat them before they beat villages down. So I'm very happy to be playing that as well. Excited. There's a really good summer lineup coming up, especially Detroit About Human. I played a demo for that at PAX East, and again when it came out on PlayStation. I'm very excited for Detroit. That might be the next game for me that really grabs my attention as a single player game.
Very good. So I want to talk about MLB The Show, but before we do that, and of course, as I said, Super Mega Baseball 2 in a minute. Owen, what have you been playing recently?
I have been all over the map. I've played some really weird Steam games, mostly because of my job. But Super Mega Baseball has been where I come home to, because it's, first of all, it's a great sports game. And then secondly, it's such a bite-sized experience. You can carve it up however you want. And I just, whenever I have 3 minutes, I can put it into Super Mega. But before that, the Steam games that I've been going on, Starship Corporation, which I am trying to understand. It is this amazing city builder, RTS, has Sim Tycoon elements within it. It's really difficult to understand, but it's a great game built by one guy. And then also Healer's Quest, which I wrote about for Polygon earlier, I think a couple of weeks ago. And that is, it takes the most unloved role of an adventuring party, and it gives it to you, the player, and makes you stand back and keep all of your fighters and wizards and archers buffed as they go forth into combat. So those are the games I'm playing.
Interesting. All right. So before we dive into Super Mega Baseball 2, Mills, The Show.
Yes.
Here's my situation. So I'm playing a franchise with my beloved New York Mets, and I'm about a week ahead in real time of real time. So it's mid-May. The way that I play is I player lock on Yoenis Cespedes for his first 3 at-bats, occasionally 4. And then once I get to the 3rd or 4th at-bat, depending upon if it's in the 5th or the 7th inning, I then go back to playing the game the normal way, which I love, because then I get 2 or 3 games in a single 45-minute session instead of 1. And all of a sudden playing 162-game season and having significant agency with what happens in that season is on the table. So that's how I play. So what happens is, if by the time that I go from player lock to playing the game regularly, the score is 7-4, me, I'm going to win. If the score is 3-3 or even, I'm going to lose, and if I am down, I'm going to lose because I cannot hit. And it's not the game, it's me. I can't hit. I do not have the brain or the mindset or the thumb skills to hit in MLB The Show anymore. And it's not for lack of trying. It's simply for a lack of ability. What What should I have to say for myself?
So you're playing offline, which is, well, obviously there's a very good thing that I can help you with here. There's nothing wrong with what you're doing. Once you get to a certain point in MLB The Show, there is, you can guess pitches, you can use all of your baseball knowledge, but at some point you have to have the twitch skills in your thumbs to react to pitches. So the different things you could do is you could build that back up. There is a practice mode if you wanted to do that. That's obviously, I don't think a lot of people use the practice mode. I think people just want to play the game and have fun with it. So here's the other awesome option you have. The reason you can't hit is because of reacting to pitches. So what I would say to you is I would lower the pitch speed slider until you get to a comfortable place where you can hit on a normal basis and then gradually increase it as you start over again. Mm. I would not. And the one thing I will say, and I don't, this has never been a problem for you, Rich. So this is more to everybody else listening to this. At some point, we have to check our ego at the door playing video games and realize that it's more important to have fun, especially offline. Online is competitive. I can we're going to set that aside for a second. But if you're playing offline, it's more important to enjoy the game that we don't have a lot of time with anymore. We're all adults. We all have different things going on. Our time is extremely valuable to us. If we're playing a game that we no longer enjoy, or if we're playing a game that frustrates us, we have abilities to change difficulty settings. And I think people get this, you know, they swell up their chest and go, I'm just going to beat this anyway. And it's not how it works. So what I would say to you personally is I would lower the pitch speed down. I would start with 2 notches down, 3 notches down, and then work your way back up when you get used to the hitting again.
That sounds like excellent advice. Oh, and how do you play the show? I mean, I know at least one way is maybe the only way as Country Breakfast, right? Is that your sole way that you're playing the show when you do play it?
I enjoy playing as a pitcher. It's my most favorite activity in video game baseball. But to get back to what Mills was saying there, you need to be very disciplined in your approach as a hitter in video game baseball. And I think Super Mega Baseball is a good teaching tool for that because it serves, you know, the at-bats and the play, you know, so much more quickly than MLB The Show does. But, you know, if you hold down to the principles of Ted Williams, don't swing at the first pitch. Don't swing until you get a strike, and don't swing at anything that fools you. You can be successful, whatever the sliders are, in MLB The Show, in RBI Baseball 18, in Super Mega Baseball 2. If you maintain that hitting discipline, you can be successful, and you can sit on a pitch. It's not my favorite thing to do. It's difficult, but you know, if you crunch down and really, you know, harden yourself and go, okay, I'm looking for this pitch here in this part of the zone, you can do it. And it's fun. Hitting the ball to the opposite field is fun.
You know, they don't do that in real baseball anymore either. Have you noticed that?
So I mean, I'm not going to lecture, you know, professional baseball hitters on their craft, but you know, I feel like a simple approach in video games, you know, delivers enjoyment. So why wouldn't it work in the real thing? Right?
Totally agree. So let's just keep on rolling on Super Mega Baseball too. So, I mean, Owen, you've obviously said this is your game that you go to play. You talked a little bit about it. Give us a little bit more on Super Mega Baseball 2. I mean, you are a well-documented, you know, fan of the original, so it stood to stood to reason that you would enjoy this game. You've been playing quite a bit of it. Give us your overall thoughts on it, what you were hoping from it, maybe, and where it delivered as well.
I think Super Mega Baseball 2, it's like it's a sequel to a great sports movie. That's sort of the way I feel about it. It the continuity is there. I can feel in the way that I play with my team. My preferred team is the Wide Loads. But they are the same with the addition of there's a new pitcher and a new hitter on the team. It's all there. I feel like I'm back home. Obviously, Super Mega Baseball 2 has, I mean, visually, it has changed. And it has removed two things. First of all, is the individual mojo score for each player, which could do really strange things to the game. It could contort the result. I had a catcher who would go, her stats would max out if she was ever in an extreme pressure situation. So that is gone. And then on the other end of things too is the injury system and the fitness system. We didn't have that at Super Mega 1. And so you have to consider these things because your players will get hurt during the game. With a frequency that I think is a little too high, but I don't know. I haven't played. I mean, I've only played it a week, so I can't really give it a large sample size appraisal there. But the game has really focused itself, in my opinion, to the gameplay. And, it's a great playing game of baseball, and the pitching system remains the best one ever in any video game I have ever played.
Mills, you've been playing it as well. We haven't had a chance to talk to you since it's been out. Give me your thoughts on Super Mega Baseball 2.
At the risk of offending some people, I think it has the best hitting engine in baseball right now, or in baseball video games right now, without question. I think the PCI, I think it's intuitive. I think you have to, it forces you to kind of guess where you want to go with the, where you're going to look for a pitch. It helps. Yeah. Well, that's the saying. So like if you leave the PCI in the middle of, or if you leave the hitting marker in the middle of the zone, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to make great contact if the pitcher's hitting the corners. So it's a game of, and especially now that they have pennant race, they have an online head-to-head mode, which is really accentuated this mechanic. If you have a pitcher on the mound making their pitches, or if you're at high ego, I play at ego 80, like you don't have time to move your PCI around and just be reactive. You have to use baseball smarts. And that's the thing that everyone that I always talk to that's never seen Super Mega Baseball at this point, like just casual fans are like, I don't really want to play a cartoonish baseball game. Like, guys, you don't understand. This is not a cartoonish baseball game on anything but the exterior. It is a really, really exceptionally solid baseball sim title with a cartoony exterior. The hitting engine, like I said, if the pitcher is hitting the outside of the zone or the top and bottom of the zone and mixing their pitches up, if you're not moving that PCI to at least the area, you're not going to be successful at the plate. It's the same thing when you're pitching. Because you know the batter could be looking in, if you start doing patterns pitching, which is 90% of baseball at this point, is pattern recognition as a hitter. If you start doing patterns as a pitcher, you're going to get destroyed even with some of the lower contact teams because they could just sit where you pitch. And that hitter-pitcher like matchup mechanism it's so phenomenal to see in action and so fine-tuned from the first one. What Owen said, I'm an Overdogs player. I love the Overdogs, like the extra speed. Like Rhonda Horn at third base is somebody that I'm going to remember. She's a monster at third base, and every time she hits, she does like this little raise the roof, and I'm like, yeah, like it gets you excited. And the other cool thing that is about Super Mega Baseball is it doesn't rely on animations to do anything. If you're where the ball is, it'll give you some weird reach behind to get the ball, but you'll still make the play. And you have this awesome throw meter where it's like you can go max power, but as soon as you miss max power, you start losing accuracy. So like it just does all these really awesome mechanics. And I'm sure we'll talk about this. They were so smart to go Games of Gold and Xbox with this. Like, how smart is that to get that in people's hands? I simply cannot. I love this game. I love that there's online in it. I wish we could go like Pro Yaku Spirits and make it like an MLB comic game. Like backyard baseball or something, like that would be perfect for this game.
If I can add to what Mills just said there, Super Mega Baseball is a game where you can sit on a pitch, you can put that the controller in the direction where you're upper right of the batting the strike zone, and you go, if the ball comes here, I'm going to hit it a mile, and you do. And that is, I don't do that in any other baseball game, but in Super Mega Baseball, you can. And that is, I think, the essence of what Mills is talking about this game being like the best hitting system, because you can sit on a pitch. I have had players in this game, Super Mega Baseball 2, go on fire, whatever the ultimate mode is, where, because you have the cadence of, locked in, great, doing well, whatever, on fire is like the top. I have had players on fire batting 700 and the pitchers are throwing away from them, like Barry Bonds in his heyday in the early 2000s. And yet I can still pick a part of the strike zone that is up and away, and I know if the ball comes there, I'm going to hit it for a double. It is a really, really good hitting system, not just pitching, hitting.
Can I just, like what he just said, pitchers pitch around hitters in this game. Like, they're so smart, especially in higher egos. It's amazing to see they'll take an extra base in this game. You'll see a player run around second, start to go to third, could have it halfway and turn back around. Like, the AI is so incredibly smart in this game. And the higher egos, it does feel, once you get over a certain amount, it's just faster pitches. But like, it's amazing to see what they can do with a computer controlled team in this game and keep it fun and not frustrating. And that ecosystem being able to just notch it up and down is just, it's just so incredibly genius on how they work this. It's amazing to me that they don't get more pub than they have.
There you go. Love it. Well, as I think we've mentioned, we are hoping to have, Scott and others from the Metalhead Software team join us. Scott's been on the show before, Scott Drader, and we want to have him come back on soon. The invitation is there, and we'd look forward to that. So something else I wanted to chat about, gentlemen, big news in my world is Pro Evolution Soccer 2019 was officially announced. That's a good thing. Now, I am an unabashed fan of both Pro Evo and FIFA this past year. In fact, I'm playing a lot of FIFA on, especially when I got my Xbox One X and my 4K TV a couple of months ago. That definitely was when I waded heavily back into the FIFA waters, because boy, on the Xbox One X on a 4K TV, that thing looks pretty amazing. So I've been playing in an online league on that. But Pro Evolution Soccer announced, it's just a good thing to me that this game exists, because, it pales wildly in comparison in sales to FIFA. We don't know what the numbers are for either, but we know that there's a wide gap. But I'm so happy that Pro Evo 2019 is coming out. I personally, the way that I play it, I'm not particularly looking for all sorts of new modes and ways to play. I only play Master League. I remake Everton every single time. This will be my probably fourth year in a row now doing it. But the game just plays beautifully. I play Pro Evo 18 at least twice a week. kind of like, oh, and you're talking about how when it's just, you know, you got 15 minutes, you want to play something. That's what I still go back to because I'm continuing my Master League. I tried to go undefeated in my third season, but I lost a match. So I'll have to try again next year. But I'm just glad that it exists. But I'm not sure if either you guys saw Konami had their latest earnings come out, and they're doing just fine. And their video game division is profitable, and they cited both the Pro Evo console game and the Pro Evo mobile game as materially, you know, doing well and generating significant growth in revenue. So, you know, while Pro Evo is nowhere near FIFA in terms of its exposure and number of players and overall, you know, awareness, but my goodness, it sure seems like it's doing well. And the fact that there's another one coming and they're touting about the improvements to Master League and, you know, all sorts of additional things and some leagues, I think that's a great thing. There's clearly, to me, in this video game economy, which where everyone is making all of the money, at least in the console space, clearly to me, Owen, there's room for two here, because Pro Evo 2019 is coming, and it seems like it's coming with quite a lot of support behind it.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think Pro Evolution is probably the truer playing soccer video game. I think that the Konami Shinji of soccer sports video game players would acknowledge that, even if they enjoy FIFA and all of its modes as well. You know, I'm glad to hear that it's healthy. I'm glad to hear that Konami's healthy with it. I don't want to disparage Konami, but my goodness, you know, what other video games do they make? There's the Metal Gear, whatever the hell the thing is. And then that's it. And then I guess they're working toward like gambling machines or something.
Yeah, they have multiple divisions, but their gaming division for console and mobile was a significant contributor, which was interesting.
Okay, well, I mean, that's great, and you know, the thing about professional soccer, or at least a video game based on it, is, you know, you have so many licenses that you can go grab, and yes, Pro Evolution does not have like the Premier League or, excuse me, at least all of the Premier League. But it, you know, it targets worthy areas in South America, Japan, obviously, and gives people, you know, that kind of an experience. And then they can recreate for themselves, you know, the parts that are missing in the game. I'm glad that it's out. I mean, I think it's kind of like NBA Live in that I think that NBA Live is a worthy competitor in that it serves a different experience, but it needs to be there. As opposed to NBA 2K, which, you know, nobody is challenging it as like it's almost a class of sports video gaming, but it's good to have a competitor in the mix to at least keep somebody on their toes. And I think that, you know, I think the Pro Evolution is out there and will continue to be in the conversation. And we know that when it launches, there will be people who say, hey, this is a better playing game of soccer. And that's going to keep EA Vancouver on its toes. And that's a good thing.
Mills, what's your relationship to Pro Evo right now?
I don't play Pro Evo. I hear you guys talk about it all the time. I've seen it play on stream. It's a very, I know the history. I know the lore. Like I know the stories of Pro Evo, but I'm also not a big FIFA guy. So coming from a completely casual standpoint in all this, it feels a lot like what Owen said, is that 2K is the big content rich basketball game that everybody gets to complain about now because it's the top dog, and Live is that upcoming, no, I won't say PES is an upcoming, obviously, but Pez is that underdog, that one that everybody wants to see. It's the backup quarterback that everybody wants to see start because the starter's getting $25 million a year, Lamar Jackson, Joe Flacco. So what I would like to see is I'd like to see more people give Pez a chance. And while sales are good, you can see that. I mean, FIFA's always going to be the big dog because of not only the EA backing, but it's like 2K. When you say basketball game, what's the first thing everyone comes to everyone's mind is 2K. When live is a very good product in its own right. When you say soccer, everyone thinks FIFA. Even though Pez, to most of the people that I talk to, think Pez, as Rich said, is better in gameplay, but FIFA destroys it with licenses. FIFA destroys it with content for FUT and all this other stuff. So from a casual standpoint, I'd like to see Pez get more of a shot from more people the same way I'd like to see Live get more of a shot from more people. You're never going to hear me say this again, I promise you. Just to keep 2K and FIFA on their toes would be nice.
Well, I think, you know, I mentioned it earlier. If you read the NPD info or the different quarterly reports, like EA just had their quarterly reports, you know, Microsoft has, Sony has, everyone, Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo, EA, Activision, you name it. The big guys are all making tremendous amounts of money these days on video games. It is a very, very, very profitable time for a lot. And that, in that kind of market, it's interesting because, again, we continue to get other things. Obviously, NBA Playgrounds is coming. NBA Playgrounds 2 is coming out in a couple of weeks as well. There's two new tennis games. There's two new tennis games coming at various points in time as well. There's a lot of activity in this space where there was not 2 or 3 years ago. It feels like that there's a just with the. The money that's sort of moving through the machinery, so to speak, there's more people seeing opportunity and more money getting reinvested into things for newer experiences. So I don't know. It's just it's interesting. And there's clearly a market for two. It'll be interesting next year with Live, right? Because, you know, Mills, you've talked quite a bit about Live, and I've heard there are other people as well who really support Live. Will it be able to get more people playing it next year? What is it going to take to do that, right? I mean, even if Live is a significantly better game, can they get the eyeballs? Do they need the eyeballs? Is Live really more about making EA Access a viable subscription as opposed to trying to compete unit sale for unit sale? Like, these are all the questions I have swirling around Live, right?
I think the existence or the opportunity of Ultimate Team is why Live exists. I mean, really, if that wasn't around, I mean, NBA Live probably would be dead. But the opportunity for open-ended revenue through Ultimate Team is probably why they're sticking with that franchise. You see it applied to, I mean, you see it applied to UFC, for God's sake. They will do it for every single sports franchise, and it may be the thing that keeps that one going, because if you get enough people who are willing to buy in and to play in on an Ultimate Team model, even if the overall product, I mean, I thought Live's career mode was great. I thought 18, by the way, you know, last year, I thought its career mode was great. I thought, you know, the way it brought people in was fun. I thought it really did a good job. I don't think it's a better playing game than NBA 2K, but NBA 2K has its issues. But it has enough of an introduction to the Ultimate Team model that makes it worthwhile for EA to continue with it. And so if that's the case, great. It's going to keep going. But, you know, NBA 2K has the My Player with all of its open-ended revenue streams and microtransactions and things like that. And certainly, you know, we see that as a priority and a model for Take-Two Interactive. It's no surprise that that is what keeps something like, you know, even a trailing competitor like NBA Live, that it's no surprise that that can keep it going too. Because if you get enough people to pay into that, you can make some money.
Mills, clearly there's enough people to support both because EA keeps making it. What does NBA Live have to do next year for you to feel even better about it and perhaps also, you think, generate more interest from a larger number of people?
So there's three things that NBA Live has to do, and I'm confident they can do at least two of them. Ultimate Team has to be more fleshed out. Ultimate Team is going to be the thing that keeps this, that keeps NBA Live going, the same way that we all know the story that I tell, that NHL 15, the only way NHL 15 still came out was because they were able to rely on Ultimate Team. NBA Live has got to flesh it out more. It can't just be solo challenges and head-to-head. There has to be programs. There has to be trade-ins. There has to be collections, all kinds of stuff. Everything you see in Madden, now, it doesn't need everything Madden has, but it needs to get into that framework of what Madden does. Second of all, the online 3v3, 5v5, that system has to be expanded upon. There has to be more rewards, not just shoes and apparel. You have to have some other reason to play instead of just, because eventually it gets old just playing to get apparel. The apparel's awesome, but you need more in there. Plus, if you're going to have a 5-on-5 mode, they have to get past just street ball. There's no reason that NBA Live does not have a 5 or 6 minute quarter, four quarter full game in any way next year, because there is a huge, huge part of the community that wants that, to be able to play that and not just street ball to 21. The third thing is franchise mode. And this is where I worry. Franchise mode was essentially completely bare bones. And I don't need Madden franchise mode. What I'd like to see is get CPU player movement, get a better draft system, make it a little more accessible, because NBA rules, you guys, I'm not sure if people that follow me on Twitter know I've been talking a lot about accessibility lately. That's where everything's going. Everything's going is make it not easier, but make it more explained, make it better onboarded, train people, explain to people what they're doing to let them have that self, that achievement, let them feel that achievement. So those three things need to be put in there into Live. And my personal want is, I mean, it's made in Tiburon, the same place Madden is. A lot of those menu screens are very similar to Madden. You know, Madden is the only online franchise that is one for one the same as it is offline. It would be huge for NBA Live to be able to say, hey, listen, everything you can do offline franchise, you can do online with 30 of your friends or 29 of your friends. I think that would be a huge step forward for people that want an NBA game, that want to play with their friends, even if it isn't as feature rich as 2K is. You could say to somebody, hey, let's go play some franchise mode. You know, there is CPU movement, but the big thing is to play with your friends in an 82 game season or a, you know, 26 game season or whatever you want to do, have those options available to you. I honestly believe that would be a big move forward, because then you could say that outside of Madden, that's the only other game with a one-to-one online franchise mode that you could play. So that's kind of a personal wish for me. But they have to expand upon those three things to be successful. And obviously keep improving the gameplay. But if you're talking about content, those three things have got to be fleshed out to continue people buying it. People bought it last year on word of mouth and saying, oh, Live is back, let me give it a chance. Oh, you know what? It really is fun. But you can't have just this shallow fun of online anymore. You've got to have people, you got to bring people back with content.
So this past week, EA had their quarterly earnings call. And on that call, the CEO, Andrew Wilson, said basically that they will be announcing that EA Access is super successful, of course, as you would imagine they would say. but that also that they will have some exciting announcements about it at E3. So reading that, I personally have two guesses as to what that would be. And I'm curious whether you guys either A, agree, B, disagree, or C, think it could be something different. I think it will be two things, actually. I think, number one, they will introduce EA Access on the Sony platform. I'm shocked to this point that EA Access is not there. And number two, I think they'll also announce a second tier, a more expensive tier. I'm guessing $5 more a month. And that tier gets you all of the games when they come out, as well as everything in the vault and all the new games without the 10-hour, post 10 hours you have to buy it. You get it. Similar to how on the Xbox Games Pass, when the first party games come out on it, they're just there day one, the full game, no 10-hour limit. And that's what I think that they're gonna announce. EA Access has been a big revenue boost for EA, and I think for a lot of more importantly, a great experience for the people who have it. I'm a subscriber, and I've been able to not buy most EA games because I won't play 10 hours of most of them. The ones that I do, I will pick up, but there's only a couple. So what do you think? Do you think I'm onto something with my two guesses on what they're going to announce at E3, or do you think it's something different, Mills?
I would be shocked if EA Play not only would, or I'd be shocked if it went to PlayStation. I really would. Like, all we've heard is how firm PlayStation is against this. I would be ecstatic, don't get me wrong, if it came to PlayStation. But then how do you pay for it? Like, do you pay one for both consoles? Do you pay a subscription service for both consoles, like Origin Access, like, because you have Origin Access on the PC as well? I would be shocked if it came to PlayStation. I would be pleasantly surprised if we started, like you said, that subscription service that you and I and others on this podcast have talked about for so long.
Yep, it's coming. I think it's coming now. I think it's time at E3 where it's just like, you know what? For what's the EA Access? $30 a year?
Yeah.
For 50, you get it all.
I would be surprised if it was 50. I would say it would probably be 100 a year.
Really?
I would, because you have to say, if it's not just EA Sports. Remember, they've got they've got a Battlefield game coming this year. Like, they've got some massive IPs. They've got Anthem coming within the next year.
It's not coming for a couple of years, and you know that.
No, I'm willing to bet it comes out within the 2019 calendar.
I'm not going with that.
So whatever it does in a subscription service, you have to remember that there it's not just the sports games. It's going to be the EA, the big side too. So any IPs that they have there are going to have to be.
Hold on, maybe you're onto something. Maybe big announcement is that it's just an EA Sports subscription service.
That'd be crazy. Get on.
I mean, Electronic Arts is software as a service is a focus of its business model. I agree with Mills. I don't see what has changed in the landscape that makes PlayStation, a better opportunity either for Electronic Arts or what makes EA Access a better opportunity for PlayStation. I mean, I just, what has changed? Also examine, I mean, really, what game subscription services are there on PlayStation 4 other than PS
Now? Right, just PlayStation Now, that's it. And right. PS Plus.
So, they want to keep it, really, locked to home there. I don't, there is, of course, the Xbox Games Pass, but, Access existed before that. I don't know that this really is going to come to PlayStation 4.
I think what's changed, you ask what's changed, Owen? I think what's changed is EA is making a lot of money off of EA Access, and Microsoft is making some of that money for offering it on their platform. And sure. I think Sony is thinking, we'd like to make money too. That's, and you know, I'm obviously a wildly oversimplifying it, but EA and Microsoft have both been very clear that EA Access is a very successful service. And again, I'm a purchaser of it. I view it as successful from my standpoint. For what I pay,
I view PlayStation as very particular about these sorts of things. And I think that it is, you know, it wants to do things on its terms. I mean, this is why EA Access did not come to PlayStation in the first place. You know, they couldn't get their heads together. Whatever the model was, they couldn't get their heads together. And that's fine. I don't understand what has changed in the interim that would make PlayStation come around on that, even with the pressure that would seem to be brought to bear by, you know, Microsoft having success with its Games Pass subscription plan. I don't think that there's, you know, enough out there. Now, to your second point, that there will be a tiered structure of EA Access where you get the whole game new first if you pay a premium. I think is probably spot on, because what you're seeing with Xbox Live Games Pass is, you know, beginning with Sea of Thieves, and then they're going to do it with Crackdown. Obviously, you know, new games come to this service first. You get them all. If you subscribe, come here, and you get everything. I could see EA doing that, which I think that's a little more reasonable of the in the big news model of things that they may have planned for E3.
All right. Hey, what do you say we answer a couple of tweets? This is one that comes from our friend Dan Murphy, and I want to start with you, Owen, because this is right up your alley. Any chance for a new PGA-licensed golf game?
I don't know. I mean, no. Not currently. I think, I think the PGA license can be had for a song, but there's all sorts of development costs that goes into it. And I don't know that EA Sports realized enough value on the back end of what it sold with Rory McIlroy PGA Tour 14. I'd love it, but golf, licensed golf, seems to be like boxing almost. It is a game that seems like a natural fit for console sports experience, and yet there just isn't enough of a market there, or not enough of a money opportunity there. And that is what these folks are all about right now.
You know what's interesting is that on May 22nd, Rory McIlroy PGA Tour will leave EA Access. Does that mean anything to you? I shouldn't say it emphatically. I can't think of a contractual reason that EA would have to pull a first-party game from its own first-party service.
This is news to me.
Yeah.
That's going to leave the service.
Right, it's going to leave the service. So is that an indicator that perhaps even at E3 they could announce? No.
I thought when they created EA Access, they said anything that goes in the vault stays there.
Right, and it's leaving. So that's an interesting indicator. Well, it could be an interesting indicator that perhaps even at E3 they announce the follow-up and for some strange reason, removing the game sort of would help generate excitement for it. Or perhaps it's a licensing situation because there's a lot of individually licensed golfers and,
yeah, I was just saying,
stuff like that.
I would say it's got to be a licensing thing. I would say licensing over anything else, because I can't imagine a second version of it, because otherwise they would start pulling the UFC games off. Because UFC games, you could very easily play UFC 2 for like a casual gamer and be like, oh, I'm just going to play this instead of UFC 3. Like, I'd be surprised if they pulled Rory McIlroy off because of a new one. It's probably because they lost Rory McIlroy's license. Didn't come out around May of 1 year.
But Mills, that's UFC is a single deal. I mean, they go ink a deal with UFC and they get the UFC, all of its marks and all of their fighters. PGA is a little bit different because it's not just, I mean, nobody really cares about, you know, the licensed golfers who appear in the game. Nobody really plays them, but it's a different beast altogether. I think you're right that it is a licensing issue that is going to pull Rory McIlroy PGA Tour 14 out of access. But it's, you know, it's strange. You would have figured that, I mean, when did EA Access launch? Was that the end of 2014 or?
Don't know. Feels like 2015, maybe 2016, but I don't know.
It may also be, you know, that this thing, you know, came out before that service launched and that EA has built into its agreements, you know, since then, you know, hey, we get to keep this on our service. And that's why some things stay there and this one doesn't. But I think that, wow, that's really strange. I did not know that. And that Rory is going to go. I mean, I have the game, I own it, you know, I don't have to worry about that, but that was in the vault. I mean, that thing is, it's gone forever after May 22. Wow.
Yeah, they announced that, unfortunately, EA Sports Rory McIlroy PGA Tour will be removed from digital storefronts and no longer available for purchase. It will also be leaving the EA Access Vault on May 22nd, 2018. It is disappearing, is getting completely erased. Digital.
That has to be a licensing issue. I mean, you know, it times out. I mean, we saw it with, you know, songs and Grand Theft Auto. You know, these things expire. But the fact that it is leaving and, you know, EA has no replacement for it probably signals what its commitment is or isn't to golf. So, you know, I think it sort of speaks for itself right there.
Yeah, I mean, basically, if they don't announce a new golf game at E3, Mills, yeah, golf is dead for EA, right?
I would have to say so. And the other part of this is they've only ever delisted one other game. I just looked it up. Was FIFA 14, and that's because they turned off the servers and removed all content from the game. So, this is the first time I've heard it too, and it's disheartening because it's a good game, and you're right. Like if they don't announce one at EA Play or E3, it's over. Like there's that golf game is not coming back. Like they don't even have anyone working on the studio at this point. I don't think so.
Wow, that's I mean, it's disheartening, but I can kind of understand it because, again, you know, they haven't made a boxing game since 2011. You know, golf is kind of in that mode of, you know, sports that, hey, you should have a video game, but Jesus, there's really not that much of a wide audience for it.
Well, we know why, though, because golf and boxing are in the exact same place right now because neither one of them has stars.
Right.
There are no stars in either sport at this point.
But, I mean, even if they could get Floyd Mayweather, I don't think they would do a fight night, you know, round five or whatever.
Right, well, because you can't base the game around one person. I agree. Floyd Mayweather is the only person. I mean, Triple G and Canelo Alvarez, like, those are names that I know, but, like, casual people don't know who they are. Like, no one knows who Triple G is. You remember, like, they based the whole game around Gotti Ward. Like, Gotti Ward was a fight that everyone knew about back in the heyday when boxing was big. UFC has a bunch of names now, and it's taken the place of boxing. Golf's in the same place. Without Tiger Woods, they tried it with Rory. Rory didn't become a star like they thought he was going to. The whole point of using Rory was because he was the up-and-coming guy. Spieth has not turned out. Like there's so many golfers that just have not lived up to to what they should be. And tennis is the same way right now. They just released AO Tennis. And then I think the Topspin guys are releasing, Rich, you mentioned earlier, like a tennis game later. There's no tennis stars right now either. I don't know how you sell a tennis game unless you're just doing it as an indie studio. The best thing for golf right now is probably going to be Golf Club 2 or Golf Club 3 coming out this summer. because they're not relying on stars. They're relying on community creations. It could be just a golf game without having to worry about like too much about purchases. And that's unfortunate that we've gotten to this point that sport, major licensed sports games worry so much about how much revenue they can bring in. And there's no way to do Ultimate Team in PGA. I would question doing Ultimate Team in boxing because at least the way UFC does it is you have moves. There's no moves in boxing. You could, I guess, do a roster of boxers, but it doesn't really work. If you can't monetize it, major licenses don't do anything for you anymore. And that's upsetting because I would love a boxing game. Someone on my Twitter feed said, we should have a Ring King. Remember Ring King? Ring King was amazing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Like, we don't have these games anymore because they can't monetize them. And I think that's upsetting. Like, no one will take a risk at monetizing a license anymore because the licenses are either too much or they're just not worth it.
No, I agree wholeheartedly with what you just said. I mean, it's a shame because, you know, a company the size of Electronic Arts is the one that has, you know, the wherewithal and the muscle to put together a licensing agreement to give you, you know, a boxing game that has the big stars, a golf game that has the big stars. And they have effectively said they ain't no money in it, and so we're not going to do it. And there's nobody else out there. I mean, you can have the golf club, great golf game, but, you know, it's all, as you said, community created content. So it's not going to be like, well, I'm going to go play Oakmont, you know, or, you know, I'm going to go play Pebble Beach or some, you know, things like that. They're not going to get that. They will have interesting courses. They will have good gameplay. But, you know, EA is effectively just, you know, washing out of this because they don't see the margin in it. And that's sad. It's sad to the consumer. I understand why they're doing it as a business, but you know, you're really seeing the weight of development costs and investor expectations brought to bear in these kinds of marginal sports. And that's what's going on.
And like you said, just to make sure it's clear, it's not just EA. Like, you don't see 2K rushing to go to any of these. 2K was behind virtual tennis, right? Like, you don't see 2K rushing out to make a golf game, or 2K's got enough on their hands, not only with their basketball title, but 2K's got a floundering WWE title right now that they're trying to figure out how to monetize.
Well, I mean, no, you're correct there, but 2K's corporate culture since, I mean, God, more than a decade has been, we own all our IP. Right. So they are very license averse, and they have NBA still because, you know, it prints money. And the idiots to throw it away, and they picked up WWE on a fire sale. But I would not look at 2K as like, oh well, you know, they can make inroads on tennis, or they can make inroads on golf, or they can make inroads on football, or anything like that. Well, obviously not football, because that's an exclusive licensing agreement. It's a little bit of a different story with 2K. You know, the corporate masters there are like, you know, you're doing great with the ones you have. We'll keep it there. I think they're making good money off of WWE. If they weren't, they'd kill it, because they killed NHL, right? You know, they killed MLB. I mean, they killed Major League Baseball. And so if this thing is not making money, it's gone. So WWE is probably making money for
them. You want to know you just said it. There's the key. You want to know what happened to all these major licensing? All you have to do is look at the fact that there is, outside of RBA baseball, which, no offense, I'm not even recognizing as in the game right now, there's not a major league baseball game on Xbox One.
Nope, not at all. Nope.
And I think we blow by that sometimes. Like, that is one of the major four sports. America's pastime does not have a major league baseball game on one of the two major consoles that is out right now, because they can't make money on it.
Well, this is where I circle back and I go, you know, MLB Advanced Media should just buy out Scott Drader, buy out Metalhead, and say, your game is now our game. Really, it should. They've made the switch already. They made it with the animations, making them more realistic. I mean, sure, they're still a little cartoonish, but you know, the way the players behave is not as herky jerky as it was in the original. They don't have the buff system in the season mode, which had all kinds of funny but obviously problematic things like you can give your player horse steroids and crap like that. They don't have that. You know, they Scott Drader and Metalhead have made probably the best playing baseball video game out there. And if MLB Advanced Media has any wits about it, they just go buy the whole thing and take it in and make it RBI for the next year and put him on staff as the developer in chief of their baseball video game. I don't understand, you know, why they would want to stick with this hacked up, you know, sort of weird, here's, you know, some stuff you remember from RBI Baseball, which is damn 30 years old, and here's some new stuff. Just the hell with it. Put it all in the Super Mega Engine, and you have a great playing, wonderfully worthy licensed video game right there. You put real MLB players in Super Mega Baseball, you'll sell a million. I mean, I don't even know how to. It makes no sense to me why you wouldn't do that.
No offense to Hammer Long Ballo, I'll miss you, brother, but I would buy an MLB game based on Super Mega Baseball's engine in a heartbeat.
Wide loads. I love all of my players on the wide loads, and I will I will kiss them goodbye if Super Mega becomes an MLB licensed game. But it needs to happen if there's going to be any kind of a worthy MLB licensed game on Xbox One. They've got to go for this.
All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Much appreciated for being on the show. A lot of fun. Thank you, everyone, for listening. As always, we really appreciate it. Have a great sports week coming up. You got your conference finals in the NBA and the NHL. Always a great time of year. Have a fantastic week. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we will talk to you again next week.